All night long, Bilbo and the dwarves had watched, but morning came with neither sight nor sound of danger. But ever more thickly the birds were gathering, wheeling and crying unceasingly above the mountain.
"Something strange is happening," said Thorin. "The time has gone for the autumn wanderings, and these are birds that dwell always in the land. There are starlings and flocks of finches, and far off there are many carrion birds, as if a battle were afoot."
Bilbo pointed. "There is that old thrush again." Sure enough, the old thrush flew towards them and perched on a stone nearby, as if to listen. And again he sang, and again he listened.
"I believe he's trying to tell us something," said Balin. "Can you make it out, Baggins?"
"Not very well, but the old fellow seems very excited."
"I only wish he were a raven. There used to be great friendship between them and the people of Thror, and they often brought us secret news. This very height was once named Raven Hill, because there was a wise and famous pair, old Kark and his wife, that lived here above the guard chamber. But I don't suppose that any of that ancient breed linger here now."
No sooner had he finished speaking than the old thrush gave a loud call and immediately flew away. Before long, there was a fluttering of wings, and back came the thrush, and with him a most decrepit old bird, an aged raven of great size.
"O Thorin, son of Thrain, and Balin, son of Fundin, I am Roak, son of Kark. It is 100 years and 53 since I came out of the egg. Now I am the chief of the great ravens of the mountain. There are great tidings in the south. Some are tidings of joy to you, and some you will not think so good. Word has gone out that Smaug is dead."
"Dead? Dead!" shouted the dwarves. "Dead? Then we have been in needless fear, and the treasure is ours."
"Yes, dead. The thrush saw him fall in battle with the men of Esgaroth 3 nights ago."
It was some time before Thorin could bring the dwarves to be silent.
"So much for joy, Thorin Oakenshield. You may go back to your halls in safety. All the treasure is yours, for the moment. The news of the death of the Guardian has already gone far and wide. Many are eager for a share of the spoil. Already a host of elves is on the way, and carrion birds are with them, hoping for battle and slaughter. By the lake, men murmur that their sorrows are due to the dwarves, for they are homeless and many have died, and Smaug has destroyed their town. They too think to find amends from your treasure, whether you are alive or dead. Your own wisdom must decide your course, but 13 is small remnant of the great folk of Durin that once dwelt here and now are scattered far. Do not trust the master of the lake men, but rather him that shot the dragon with his bow. Bard, a grim man but true. We would see peace once more among the dwarves and men and elves after the long desolation. But it may cost you dear in gold. I have spoken."
Then Thorin burst forth in anger.
"Our thanks, Roak Kark's son. You and your people shall not be forgotten. But none of our gold shall thieves or the violent carry off while we are alive. If you would earn our thanks still more, bring us news of any that draw near. But go quickly to my cousin Dane in the Iron Hills, for he has many people well armed and dwells nearest to this place. Bid him hasten."
"I will not say if this counsel be good or bad, but I will do what can be done."
"Back to the mountain," cried Thorin. "We have little time to lose."
"And little food to use," cried Bilbo, always practical on such points.
"Back to the mountain," cried the dwarves, as if they had not heard him. So back he had to go with them.
They explored the caverns once more, and found, as they expected, that only the front gate remained open. So now they began to labour hard in fortifying the main entrance. As they worked, the ravens brought them constant tidings that the Elven King had turned aside to the lake, and that the joined armies of the lake men and the elves were hurrying towards the mountain. Already they had blocked the gate with a wall of squared stones laid dry, They had altered the narrow bed of the stream that a wide pool stretched from the mountain wall to the head of the fall over which the stream went towards Dale. Approach to the gate was now only possible along a narrow ledge of the cliff. Then one evening they saw many lights of fires and torches.
"They have come,"
called Balin. "And their camp is very great." That night the dwarves slept little. The morning was still pale when they saw a camp approaching. At length the foremost of these climbed the tumbled rocks and appeared at the top of the falls. And very great was their surprise to see the pool before them and the gate blocked with a wall of new-hewn stone. Thorin hailed them.
"Who are you that come as if in war to the gates of Thorin, son of Thrain, king under the mountain, and what do you desire?"
But they gave no answer. Some turned swiftly back, and the others, after gazing for a while at the gate and its defences, soon followed them. That day the camp was moved to the east of the river, right between the arms of the mountain. The rocks echoed then with voices and with song as they had not done for many a day. There was the sound, too, of elven harps and of sweet music, and as it echoed up towards them, it seemed that the chill of the air was warmed, and they caught faintly the fragrance of woodland flowers blossoming in the spring. Bilbo longed to escape from the dark fortress and to go down and join in the mirth and feasting by the fires. Then the dwarves themselves brought forth harps and instruments regained from the hoard. But their song was not as elvish song, and was much like the song they had sung long before in Bilbo's little hobbit hole.
"Under the mountain dark and tall, the king has come into his hall. His foe is dead, the worm of dread, and ever so his foe shall fall. The sword is sharp, the spear is long, the arrow swift, the gate is strong. The heart is bold that looks on gold, the dwarves no more shall suffer wrong. The mountain throne once more is freed. O wandering folk, the summons heed. Come haste, across the waste, the king of friends and kin has need."
This song appeared to please Thorin, and he smiled again and grew merry, and he began reckoning how long it would be before Dane could reach the lonely mountain. But Bilbo's heart fell, both at the song and the talk. They sounded much too warlike. The next morning early, a company of spearmen bearing with them the green banner of the Elven King and the blue banner of the lake advanced before the wall at the gate. Thorin hailed them.
"Who are you that come armed for war?"
Bard answered.
"Hail, Thorin. Why do you fence yourself like a robber in his hold? We came expecting to find none living here. Yet now that we are met, there is a matter for a parley and a council."
"Who are you, and of what would you parley?"
"I am Bard, and by my hand was the dragon slain and your treasure delivered. Is that not a matter that concerns you? Moreover, I am by right descent the heir of Gideon of Dale, and in your hoard is mingled much of the wealth of his halls and towns, which old Smaug stole. Is that not a matter of which we may speak? Further, in his last battle, Smaug destroyed the dwellings of the men of Esgaroth, and I am yet the servant of their master. I would speak for him, and ask whether you have no thought for the sorrow and misery of his people. They aided you in your distress, and in recompense you have thus far brought ruin only, though doubtless undesigned."
"You put your worst cause last and in the chief place. To the treasure of my people no man has a claim, because Smaug, who stole it from us, also robbed him of life or home. The treasure was not his that his evil deed should be amended with a share of it. The price of the goods and the assistance that we have received of the lake men we will fairly pay, in due time. But nothing will we give, not even a loaf's worth, under threat of force. I will not parley with armed men at my gate, nor at all with the people of the Elven King, whom I remember with small kindness. Begone now, ere our arrows fly. And if you would speak with me again, first dismiss the elvish host to the woods where it belongs, and then return, laying down your arms before you approach the threshold. The Elven King is my friend,
and he has helped the people of the lake in their need, though they had no claim but friendship on him. We will give you time to repent your words. Gather your wisdom ere we return. Then he departed and went back to the camp. Ere many hours were passed, the banner bearers returned, and trumpeters stood forth and blew a blast. In the name of Esgaroth and the forest, cried the herald, we bid you consider well the claims that have been urged or be declared our foe. At the least, you shall deliver 1/12 portion of the treasure unto Bard as the dragon slayer and as the heir of Gideon. From that portion Bard will himself contribute to the aid of Esgaroth, but if Thorin would have the friendship and honor of the lands about, as his sires had of old, then he will give also somewhat of his own for the comfort of the men of the lake. Then Thorin seized a bow of horn and shot an arrow at the speaker. It smote into his shield and stuck there, quivering. Since such is your answer, called the herald, I declare the mountain besieged. You shall not depart from it until you call on your side for a truce and a parley. We will bear no weapons against you, but we leave you to your gold. You may eat that if you will. With that, the messengers departed swiftly, and the dwarves were left to consider their case. Bilbo disapproved of the whole turn of affairs. The whole place still stinks of dragon, he grumbled to himself. And it makes me sick.